Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are preparing to leave for Jacksonville, Florida, and the International Brotherhood of Magicians annual conference. This should be, again, a lot of fun with a lot of friends and magicians to get together and share ideas and secrets. If you guys haven't been to an IBM convention or an SAM convention, for that matter, you need to go to some national convention. Regional conventions are great, and those which are the one-off kinds of things, like Magic Live and the Genie conference, those are fantastic, and I recommend them as well. I'm just saying, I love conventions, and I think you probably do too, or you would be listening to this podcast. So here we are, as I said, setting and getting ready to attend the convention coming up for July 15th through the 18th. Yes, that's the correct, those are the correct dates. And I'm at the airport in Houston, Southwest Airlines. Just finished my Dunkin' Donuts fix. And I just got back from FISM in Rimini, Italy, where they don't have Dunkin' Donuts. And when you order coffee, you get espresso. And that's fine, too. I get to sample a lot of the local culture. But when I want coffee, I want a big, tall, large cup of black Americana coffee. And so it's great to be back and have a good cup of Dunkin' Donuts, and also to get ready to board Southwest to take me through Atlanta on the way to Jacksonville. Should, again, have just a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to not only this convention, but also next week, perhaps, of getting some sleep, because last evening we just returned from Italy, from FISM, and got in after some difficulty. Actually, the plane jetway door was jammed, and they wouldn't let people out for almost 45 minutes, and so people were standing in line trying to get off the airplane as we returned back to Houston. So by the time we got our luggage, and which one of the bags was lost or misplaced, got rerouted in Toronto with one of the party I was traveling with, and so we got delayed. Didn't get back home, start washing the clothes and everything by midnight. Got up at 4 o'clock in order to get things repacked and out of the dryer and get ready to go to Jacksonville. So I will sleep when I'm dead. So you can you can enjoy these podcasts. Hopefully daily updates will continue throughout this week as we go into the convention and hear from some of the talent, some of the organizers, which would be me. I happen to be the co-chairman of the convention along with Mike Stratman. So I'll be talking with Mike as well as some of the other people. As I said, the talent, some of the registrants, the dealers, it should be, again, just a lot of fun. And thank you for coming along for the ride. Thank you very much for supporting the Magic Word Podcast and for listening. And I hope you enjoy this day one report from the Magic Word. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we finally arrived in Jacksonville, and I just registered for the convention over here. Actually, just picked up my registration packet, and I'm here then with Obie O'Brien. Hi, Obie.
How you doing, Scotty?
Fantastic. And so we are, of course, here getting ready for Jacksonville, and you and I are still kind of on Italian time right now. We never got a chance to talk much about FISM, but before we get to talking about the IBM, just what were your comments, thoughts, reflections on Rimini?
Well, Rimini itself was very nice. Yeah. Where they held the convention was fantastic,
great,
I thought.
Great facility.
The only thing is, I don't like the way the Italians run conventions. They're never on time. Start an hour late, a half an hour. No, it's an hour and more close to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
The stage contest was fairly good. According to everybody that told me that... close-up contest was fantastic. I mean, we had great, we had a tiered seating, we had everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
great cameras and high-definition...
The cameras are so great that on the stage the judges couldn't see the threads and stuff like that, but the audience could see it.
I could see it.
Yeah.
I was sitting way in the back and I said, there's a thread, look at this.
You know? Yeah, but it only showed up on the screen, it didn't show up close.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah, I mean... That was the funny part.
Yeah.
I said, look at that, we can see the threads. But the guy says, with the cameras, the people sitting up close can't see it.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it
usually
really is.
It used to be the other way around.
Exactly.
It seems like now the stage has become close up and vice versa.
You're right. You're right.
Well, you were in charge of the close-up contest. Were you a close-up, not the judge, but you and Kate Medvedeva were...
No, Kate Medvedeva was the head judge for close-up.
Okay.
And Garrett Bregman was the sort of overseer for the close-up. But I ran a close-up contest.
Okay,
I had 448 people.
When you say you ran it, you mean you were just making sure that all the contestants were lined up and
It started right after 4F. So in May and June, I had to send out text sheets to every guy that was competing in a close-up contest. Mm-hmm. Had to get to whether they had music, whether they want tables, whether they want this, whether what they need, etc. Before we even got there, then when we got there, we had to tech everybody. So everybody, we got a 10-minute tech time, but we put down 15 minutes so that people getting there and, setting up or something like that. But we only gave them 10 minutes. The stage people got the same thing. Mm-hmm. But we teched starting on Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon till, 6:30 or 7. And then I started on Monday morning. We teched from 8:30 to 1 o'clock, and we had our first close-up contest.
Two
was the opening gala.
That's right, so it was after the gala, that's right.
We were supposed to have our opening close-up contest at 4:30.
Yeah.
But they were an hour and a half late already.
Right.
So it ended up we started about 5:45 for the close-up contest, and supposed to finish at 8:30, and we finished about 9:30.
Now, were they delayed because of the television getting set up inside or something?
Yes, the television.
I mean, they wouldn't even open the doors to let the rest of us come in and sit down. I don't understand that.
You don't understand it. At 9 o'clock, for a 9:30 show at night, they started opening the doors at 5 after 9.
Yeah.
I mean, for you're getting in 2,500, 2,800 people, mm-hmm. which is crazy.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
I mean, it was really... I don't understand it either, but a guy asked me, he said to me, I won't tell you who it is because of, he said, Obi, you know where we are? And I said, yeah, we're in Rimini. And he says, yeah, what for? I said, for the magic convention. He said, what magic convention? I said, FISM. He said, do you see any FISM signs around here?
Yeah.
No, all you saw was Masters of Magic, but that's the guy that's running it, so that's what we saw. But there was a couple of signs here and there. I mean, they were small and fine.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a pretty good convention, but there was a lot of snags that everybody didn't like, and one of them being late.
The one thing that was obviously controversial had to do with Juan Mayoral saying that he wasn't going to perform, and what he was stating was that it had to do with, he didn't want to do it with these broadcast television commercialism things. However, somebody later, and I won't say who either, was telling me that that wasn't his true intent, even though that's what his words were. Do you understand what that was about?
Yes, he said, I'm a professional and I perform on a stage, and this is not a stage. This is a theater that's supposedly a stage, but it's not, and I will not perform the way this is here.
Okay. Until it returns again to being a theater.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. In the way that it should be, in the
Correct.
Way it used to be, and making it more for the contestants and not for the broadcast audience.
Correct.
Okay.
But 50% of the people were for that, and 50% of them were against him. But he ends up saying that.
Yeah.
All he should have said is, I'm not performing, and walked off, but he didn't. He elaborated, and they clapped like crazy and so on.
Yeah. Well, then there was... Paul Daniels on the evening show, and saying that if you don't like it, then don't come next year.
That's right. And they even booed that.
Yes, people are whistling and booing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it was just crazy.
Yeah. Well, how many close-up contestants were there?
I had 48.
48, okay.
It was supposed to have 50. And I started with 53 or 54. Mm-hmm. And before I got there, we were down to 48.
Wow, okay.
Stage contest started with 99, and I think they ended up with 97, maybe 98.
Why do you think that some of the close-up people started bailing out?
Well, some of them just said they weren't ready.
Yeah.
One or two, and I don't know what are the other excuses. Hannibal from the United States.
He didn't show up. I was surprised.
Well, he was working the Magic Castle, and... he just decided that I don't think he was ready, and he stayed home.
Someone sent me a Facebook message about that, whether Hannibal was there or not, and I said, I haven't seen him. I knew he was supposed to be competing. That was interesting.
Well, I know a guy real well, and he told me that Hannibal's coming, and I said, no, he isn't. He said, oh, yeah, I heard he's coming. And I said, well, I run in a close-up contest, and I know he's not coming.
His name's not on there, yeah.
Because FISM sent me a thing and said, scratch him.
Hmm.
So,
Interesting. Well, Christian Painter was observing. Yeah, on stage. But he was telling me when we were chatting on a podcast that people should not compete at FISM until they have attended at least one, so they know what to expect. Because there were some people who came who shouldn't have been there. And they compete in on a certain level, whether in the U.S. or their own country or wherever it is. And then they come here and realize, wow, this is bigger than the big leagues.
Well, all they have to do is go to one of the FISM Europe, FISM Asia, FISM America, FISM South America, FISM, you know.
Yeah.
They have the Continentals. And go one of the Continentals and see what it's like.
Sure.
But in FISM America, which is North and South, we don't have the really, really good performers.
Mm-hmm.
And they think you're getting in that contest and you only see three or four people. We can't have a guy come from Finland and compete with ours. We can't have a guy come from Germany. We can't have a guy come from Japan.
Right.
Because they're not eligible.
On the continent, right.
Only ones that can compete and go to FISM are the ones in North America, have a passport from North America that can compete in FISM. And it all started with Woody
Aragon
and Hector Mancha in 2012 when they won the IBM and SAM, got the right to go to back then, and they wouldn't let them into FISM because they weren't from the country.
Interesting. Well, again, this is the IBM convention, not FISM, but I did want to kind of get your take on this, that you were involved with this one.
Yes, that's for
closely.
Sure.
And so with the IBM convention, how many of these have you attended? I mean, you're past president of the IBM and everything, too.
I think I've been to 44 out of 46, or maybe 44 out of 47. I was just looking at the thing. I started,
this is the 84th, I think, or 85th, I think, convention.
Well, yes, but...
You mean since you have...
Since I first started in 1968.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see. Where is the page? I went to my first one, I think, in 1968 in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
How do they differ now, the conventions, the IBM conventions now? I'm sure back then they had a banquet, and, of course, people dressed up, and it was a lot more fancy affair than the casual things we have today. But aside from that, what else do you remember? What stands out that might be a highlight from an IBM convention?
Well, there's a lot of things. The first one I went to was I thought the IBM. I didn't join the IBM, and I joined the IBM in '62, and my first convention because I was going to summer schools for '63 right through to '67 and '68. I think I finished up in '68, and they had a Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I went, and man, was it bad!
Really bad.
Really, really, the stage.
The talent, you mean? Or
yes.
And everything.
Because the local club was running it.
Okay.
And then when they had it in 1970, it was bad also. But then the IBM decided to take it over and run it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Have a convention committee.
Yes, and then they decided that, hey, and it got better and better. Now, since Eric Eswin was the president of FISM for the last, I don't know, 9 years or something, he introduced this Continental. So the FISM was bad in some places too. I mean, really bad. And the close-up was awful.
Yeah.
And since the Europeans and the Asians and et cetera, in North America and the Continentals have raised the level really up high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best thing that I think he ever did for Magic.
I talked with Eric, and he does seem to be pretty proud of what he has done there.
He should be. Uh-huh. I mean, they had people at the Magic Castle sponsored a man and a woman did comedy. It was, I mean, if they were in there today, they would have gotten marks probably way below 50.
Yeah. And well, I remember in Sweden that there were a couple of close-up guys who I think got red-lighted, the person who had recommended them was more of a friend, I think. It was kind of one of these buddy deals as opposed to somebody who was really qualified.
You're right. I mean, they weren't qualified to be on the FISM level.
Well, in situations like that, if you had, as I understand, we're kind of going back to FISM for a second, but whenever that you do make a recommendation of somebody and they don't meet minimum qualifications, don't they say, okay, well, you can't make another recommendation for our next couple of FISMs or something? Or?
No, right now, the way it is with the European, not European, because it started in Europe, the Continentals now come in. You might get a bad act that gets red lighted, okay? That one may be like a IBM or SAM or something like that, because we don't have the top talent. Now, we were sitting down and talking. We have 15 slots for North America to put down for FISM stage and close-up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have 15 really good people to send.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the program from FISM, we had about four or five that were really could hold their own in the competition.
Right.
And the other ones should have never been in the competition. But some people were on the committee just said, well, they want here, we'll send them if they want to go.
Yeah. Well, speaking of competition, I know we have a lot of competitors here for the IBM convention, and I understand that Shin Lim, who won first place for Close Up, was going to be coming and competing here, hoping to win the Gold Cups even. I mean, this is quite a prestigious award that we have with the Gold Cups and the gold medal.
Correct, and he had a good chance to win the Grand Prix.
Sure did.
And he just lost by a few points. I don't know how many points, but he tied with a guy by the name of Harat Wu from Korea, or Taiwan.
Taiwan.
Sorry,
yeah.
Taiwan.
That guy was awesome.
Yes, and those two tied.
Yeah.
And can you imagine in FISM we had Micro Magic, and in Micro Magic we had 17 people, and in 17 people I would say 13 to 15 of them were well qualified to compete, and when they didn't give, the judges didn't give them a first place. So, I mean, that really shocked me when I saw that.
Huh. I hadn't thought about that statistic, but
yeah.
You're right.
Huh. So, what do we have on stage in the finals? We had two from cards and one from...
Parlor. Yeah.
We should have had two from cards, one from Micro, and one from Parlor. We should have had four.
Yeah.
But Shin Lim had a chance to win $12,500. And it ended up Pierre from Switzerland won the $12,500.
Yeah, right. And the difference is also that Pierre has a talking act, whereas Shin Lim's, I think, can play anywhere in the world because it's a silent act.
But Shin Lim's silent act is fantastic with the smoke and everything else.
Yeah,
when the
yeah.
guys saw it at 4F, they said, wow.
I remember.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen it three times now.
Yeah.
And
he performed in one at the TAOM also.
Did he?
Yeah.
He's a great magician, great thinker, and everything else.
In fact, it seems like that when he won the TAOM, and I posted that on my podcast, I had an email from his mother in Canada
uh-huh.
saying, I had to read this on your blog as opposed to my son calling and telling me he had won this.
Yeah, that would have been really funny, is right.
Yeah.
But I think they're living in Boston now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He was born, I think, in Singapore and moved to Canada when he was four or five.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember how old he was when his mother and father moved to Boston.
So going back again to the IBM convention, just quickly and wrapping up, whenever that you've been going since 62, and that was there a location or someplace also that stuck out as a great memory of a convention? Maybe the year that you were president or whenever?
Well, when you hear that you're president, you can't remember or see anything because you're doing other kind of stuff for the IBM.
I don't think it would just go so fast.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the real funny part. But I think the convention was good. I thought the convention was pretty good in Quebec City. That was 94 when I was inducted into mm-hmm. being the president that year. And other ones, there's been some real good ones, to tell you the truth. And I just can't say this was better than that or that
yeah.
was better than this, you know, because
it's like choosing a child.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's great. Well, Obi, thank you. I'm going to let you go over here, and thanks very much, and look forward to having a great convention.
Well, thanks for interviewing me, and I hope everybody out there listens and maybe gets some idea of what the FISM and IBM is all about.
That's right. It has a lot to do with contests.
Yes,
and that's
what
I encourage people also to come and compete on this level for the IBM in close-up and in stage. So
so you asked me now, you said this is what, the 86th, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my first one was the 40th.
Okay.
So from 40 to 86, that's 46 plus 1 is 47.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think I've been to 44 out of 47.
That's pretty darn good.
And the funny part is, one I missed when a daughter graduated from high school, okay, because I had to be there for her first graduation.
Yeah.
Another one I missed, I was at FISM, and I couldn't get back to Texas. I can't remember where it was in Texas, but I couldn't get back there to go, and I can't remember why I missed the other one.
Well, I've been attending the 4F, I think, for 31 years, and there was one I missed. I had a call like at 4 a.m., and my mother-in-law had just died, and I had a 7 o'clock flight the next morning to go out, and my wife said, well, what are you going to do? I mean, she was giving me the option. You want to go to the funeral? Or the funeral? It's like, well, I'm going to go to the funeral. So I called you, and so moved that to the next. And then this year, when Jack Goldfinger called me and said, well, I want you to work at the castle. It's like, oh, man, but there's a conflict. He said, well, that's the date I got open. So it's like, okay. So yeah. Those are only two that I missed. So it's such a great time. You really put on a good convention.
Well, going back to FISM right there, if you don't mind me just bragging a little bit about it, 8 out of the 11 awards for close-up were 4F guys.
I saw all of us, the competitors at least, were wearing 4F pins. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I kept punching my wife, saying, hey, look, that guy's got on a pin. He's wearing a pin.
Yep.
Because you can read it, you know, with the high definition we were talking about.
Exactly right. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It's great. Thanks again.
Okay.
Owen. Okay, we'll
thanks,
see you later.
Scotty. Bye.
That was Obie O'Brien for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com. And as we get started into the day one with the IBM convention, I'm here with talent chairman, Mr. Ken Scott. Hello, Ken. Good morning.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Fantastic.
Are we awake?
We are awake and on our third cup of coffee and already had some meetings and everything. So as talent chairman, how did you go about trying to contact people? Because I know a lot of magicians out there saying, gee, I'd like to work conventions. Or
sure.
How do I get it? How do you select? I mean, you've had your own convention with the Atlanta Harvest of Magic and
right.
Everything. So how do you go about that?
Well, I was honored to be asked to do this. This was, Sean typically is the guy who does that, but
Farquhar.
Sean Farquhar is our president. So I think it was a conflict of interest, so I kind of stepped in for him for this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as my conventions I've had in the past, I like getting acts that I think everyone's going to enjoy, but most importantly, when they lecture and they perform, you can still see them hanging around the lobbies. I like performers who hang
accessible.
That are very accessible. They don't do their lecture and run. They don't do their show and go hide. That they hang out with the people that are registered for the convention, because that is the part of the convention that I think is most memorable for the convention goers. So, and then I like acts that want to see each other. I like acts that want to, you know, they really will come from another part of the country and say, hey, I want to go hang out with Sean and see Sean Farquhar and these guys. So it's a puzzle trying to get that. Come, you know, that group
mix
of people, that mix of people to make it work. But that's the first step I do. And then just trying to find something I think everyone will enjoy. You know, find something that I think everyone can grab onto, whether it's cards, whether it's someone does coins, whether it's comedy, whether it's kid shows, and finding that right mix.
Mm-hmm. And do you also, with that mix, try to get some new talent versus some that are classic? I mean, like
absolutely.
This year we're having Fantasio.
Right.
I talk about someone who's classic and who's well-known, but on the Ed Sullivan Show, and a lot of young people never even heard of Ed Sullivan, kind of a thing. But
well, when I was brought on, I was told not to bring people who had performed at IBM like in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
But they wanted to see, you know, some new faces.
New acts, yeah.
So I think if you look at the talent we brought in, a lot of these acts have never done an IBM.
Name a few.
I think Kaplan.
David Kaplan.
I think, I'm not sure Shoma has ever done an IBM. Bill Abbott has never done an IBM.
I know that's for sure.
Suzanne, our close-up, who was just on Penn & Teller's Foolish.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. She just filmed it, so I think her airs in September. But there's several acts. I don't have it all in front of me, but there's a lot
Cosmo
of acts.
I don't know if Cosmo has been here before.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he's been a dealer, but I don't think he's necessarily lectured. Had a full house last night for his lecture.
Full house for a pre-show is nice, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited. I think we got a lot of good people coming in. And, you know, bring in Mullica. I don't know when the last time Mullica did an IBM. It has been over 17 years probably.
It's been some time since I believe he was here last. And he's a perennial favorite, I think, for any convention.
Sure.
Certainly. Just quite a coup, I think, to get him at any convention. But the fact that we've had... this following on the heels of FISM. I mean, first of all, we had the SAM, and then quickly there was FISM, and then this. And Sean Farquhar has been to all three.
Yeah.
So I don't see...
of that.
Well,
kind.
You have too. You went to FISM. You see a lot of tired people walking around here at the hotel right now. So
yes.
We're grateful that Starbucks is a free refill all day long here.
That's why, I want our third cup of coffee here. Keep going. Again, this has been challenging. You've more than met the challenge. You've done a great job. We got some great people here who are going to be performing. We've got the evening show in the theater, plus other stuff that's going to be going on with what we call a six-pack, in which we have six different programs that are mm-hmm. going on at simultaneous. And then you can go from one to the other. You get a choice of three, I think, of those, basically.
Two.
Is that two? Okay.
Two, yeah. So the six packs, they'll do their lectures
repeat.
Twice.
Okay.
And the people will change if they decide, if they want to, or they can go watch it again if they want.
Sure.
But it's the same lecture back to back, which is a great concept because it's broke down into more specific lecture content. So if a guy wants to
talk about a restaurant,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then you got Paul Cumming is just doing a lecture just on a deck of cards.
Okay.
On any deck of cards.
From a shuffle deck.
From a shuffle deck, exactly. And so if that is your forte, then that would be perfect for you. I think Eric Buss is doing something on comedy writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's something, like I said, if you look through the program, there's something for everybody that would find your interest.
And speaking of Eric Buss, I thought it was, again, quite a coup on your behalf of getting the Shenanigans show.
Yeah, that's going to be
fun. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, he started this show in Arizona. I think that's where he's from, Tucson, I believe. And it was him and Danny Cole and Ivan, Ivan the juggler. And they have a DJ, and it's a show where they all kind of work off each other. Mm-hmm. They all kind of, it's not just an act and then MC an act. Everybody kind of works throughout the show with each other. And it's
I see.
So it starts with a DJ playing music, and it's a shenanigans. They have their bunch of misfits out there, they can call them. So I think it's going to be fun, and that show's tomorrow night. So, but yeah, and Eric's got Eric, and he's got John Schrock and his wife in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ivan, and then they have Greg Shibley, who there is the DJ for that. So.
And Danny Cole was unable to make it because he got an obligation for something else.
Yeah, Danny mm-hmm. Cole got an obligation many, many months ago to do some overseas work. And
mm-hmm.
You can't blame some of these guys when they can make what I call real money.
Real money. Now, that's going to be like just them only on that show for Wednesday night, isn't that right?
Thursday night,
at the theater.
Right, at the VAR Theater.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we got a lot of good stuff that's lined up for this, certainly. And going beyond that, then the convention that you did at the Atlanta Harvest this last year had its own challenges, and you met that, and it was successful. And are you going to be doing that again?
Well, I decided this year not to do my convention just for the fact that, as you know,
too many
conventions.
Perfect storm.
And I'm a believer that people can only go to one or two conventions a year at best. I mean, it's just not doable. So I decided not to do mine this year. And decided to perhaps do it next year. And I haven't decided if I'm going to keep it in September or October. So I've got to look at those numbers. But I definitely want something in Atlanta because I think Atlanta needs that convention. We do well when we have conventions there. We mm-hmm. usually get, mm-hmm. for a regional convention, 200, 225 people. So, so we'll see you next year.
When I think back about the Atlanta Harvest, that was one of my favorite conventions that I had ever attended because that was when I first met and became friends with Terry Seabrook.
Oh, yeah.
The reason that I had gone is because that I wanted to see Kozak and also Slidini perform his onstage Linking Ring routine and to see Terry Seabrook. And it was just, or was it Joe DeLion? I think it may have been Joe DeLion, not Kozak.
Kozak was ever there, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it was Joe DeLion. But anyhow, it was just a very good convention, a lot of fun, and great.
The Atlanta Harvest conventions were always historically were always a convention that performers heard about and wanted to be a part of because mm-hmm. they knew how fun it was. And I can't wait to talk to Mullica when he gets here at this convention because he was a big part of the Atlanta Harvest for so many years. Yeah, so
he probably brought a lot of his friends over to say
hey. But you know, him and Dave Williamson used to do some really crazy antics at the Harvest conventions, and they had some great fun there. So I'm trying to get Atlanta back to that. And
because Maney's, what were the names?
Jim and Diane.
Jim and Diane Maney were the ones who had originally had
yeah,
them for
like
20 years or something.
Yeah, it went for 23, I think, 22, I believe it went. But, you know, they owned a magic shop in Atlanta that was a staple for us.
And each year they said, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, every year.
Somebody pushed their arm.
Every year. And then her parents got sick, and she was taking care of other obligations with that, then her job that she has with real estate. So I think it just became harder. And then it's not the same booking conventions now as it was back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I mean, things have changed, acts have changed, and you know, you got to have your pulse on what's new and what's happening in the magic, because it is a forever changing field. So
yeah, it is. Well, and as a performer yourself, you know the challenges that are unique to conventions, that are different from working for, and like you said earlier, the real world, I guess, certainly. And so, you've done a good job of booking the talent and calling on friends and having some favors. And so that's why I think we've got some great people. Yeah, it's easier when you know somebody, as opposed to calling them cold. So.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's favors, you gotta return the favors eventually. You gotta say, Ken, remember that time?
Remember when? Yes, that's right. I was just talking with Trixie Bond, for an example, and we're going to have Steve Daly at the TAOM convention.
That's coming. I'm going to be there for that.
This is going to be in a few weeks, too. So, let me hype that. You guys need to come to Austin. Trixie Bond's going to be the president. But she was asking Steve Daly to come and attend, which he's going to be. It's going to be great. He's going to be on the women, all women's evening. I think he's going to emcee the thing in drag. Anyhow, he said, I'll come if you will come and do my abracadabra. So she said, oh, see, if I don't want to work conventions, so that's the deal. You come work mine, I'll work yours. So, yeah, a little tit for tat. Everybody's got to scratch each other's back.
But I saw that lineup for the Texas convention. I did that years ago for you guys in Houston. It's great.
It was.
So this year it's in Austin, Texas. And she's got, it's a ladies' night.
Women, weirdness, music, and magic, I think is what her theme is. She's got music that's going to be lined up in the hallways and in between lectures and in the rooms, and so there will be live bands of all kinds that are going to be going on in between. So there will be constantly something going on, not just magic, but also the music. And also with her being a female magician, that she is has a lot of women who are going to be coming, like Jade, like Suzanne.
Yeah. And Kristen Lambert.
Kristen Lambert's going to be there. I'd forgotten several other ladies magicians, so it's going to be a good one. So.
Hey, Robert Bax is going to be there.
That's right. Yeah, Robert's a good friend of Trixie's. He's going to be there as well. It's going to be another good convention. And
see, there again, she's booking people that she's worked with, that she knows, and it makes it work well, especially when you know these people. So she does a good job. You guys always do a good job in Texas. That's going to be a fun convention, so I can't wait.
I'll see you there then, too. So let me just close by saying, since this is the magic word, and I've asked you, I think, in this the past, and things change, what is your philosophy of life? What is it that's important to you? What's your magic word?
Magic word
or phrase or...
It's probably not magic-wise, but mine is just my family. I love my family, and they love what I do.
You are a family guy. I'm not surprised that you're...
Yeah, you know, because I do family shows, but I just love my family when they come to my shows, and they keep me going, and they keep me fresh in this crazy industry we're in of doing shows.
You have to have that support.
You have to have that support, and my God, for me to come to Jacksonville for 5 days without them while they're at home... It's some people that'd be a tough sell to if we just get in the van and go. So family, that's my number one word.
That's good. I hear that from a lot of guys.
I bet you do.
Yeah,
it's the go-to. It's so easy.
Very good. That was Ken Scott from the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are over at Finn's, which is an Irish pub on Jackson Landing, which is just right down the street, about one block away from the hotel. Just having a little lunch with Steve Klein and Ryan, and these are the guys who are the production team behind, they do the magic behind the magic. You guys are awesome. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning. Nice to see you.
And it's good being seen. And so let me ask you some of the struggles that you had with putting this thing together. What has been different about this one? I mean, you work with the SAM too, is that right?
I do. We do all the production for the SAM as well as the IBM. I think the biggest challenge, Scott, in what we do as a production company and from the technical end, is loading in the ballrooms. Buildings aren't all to scale across the United States. Meaning, the hotel that we were in Philadelphia, the ballroom was twice as big as the hotel we're in, the ballroom we're here in Jacksonville. But the equipment's the same size. So we have to we have to scale. I mean, stage decking is 4x8, and then we put 6 across, it's 48 feet. We put 7 across, we're in trouble. We're in a wall.
Yeah.
And then the challenge with that as well is fire code and rules and regulations of the local city that we're in. We can't block exits. We have to be X amount of feet off the wall. We have to have our aisles have to be so big, yet we still have to fit 450 seats in comfortably for our registrants to be able to see.
Mm-hmm.
All the while keeping in mind that where we put what we call our front of house, which is our show command, where we control the show from with all our lighting, audio, and video, we have to have that within proximity of the stage because our cables are only so long. We only have so much on the truck.
And right.
We can't put it 200 feet away when it needs to be 50 feet away. So
yeah.
The logistics is probably the biggest challenge for us. Working with hotel staff and AV staff and the local in-house providers probably second.
And what about working sometimes with union labor?
Union labor is tough, and that's one question that always comes up. I mean, do we have to use union? If no, then I find an outside source. Obviously, prices are a lot less expensive. We're still looking at the same talent pool within a city. We cannot hire union outside of the union. They will lose their union card.
Wow.
But we can hire labor companies that have stagehands that know what they're doing. I just can't hire a Joe Blow off the street to come in and, you know, tie in our audio or our video. They have to know what they're doing.
But you have Ryan and some of these other guys that kind of
I do. I have Ryan's my right-hand guy. He is he's my production lead on a lot of the things that we do because, you know, I can't do it all. I wish I could, but I can't.
Sure.
And there's so many facets. You know, the load-in was 11 guys. We had 8 stage hands and then the 3 of us.
And how many hours did that take to load
in? We loaded in. The whole show was loaded in 5 hours. Yeah. I mean, done. Up and ready to go. So... But keeping in mind, it's just like rehearsing for a magic show and then going to do the show. You're really getting paid for the rehearsal. You're not getting paid for the show.
Yeah.
And our time spent driving from Columbus, Ohio to Columbia, South Carolina, and then Columbia to Jacksonville, you're looking at probably about 13 or 14 hours sitting in the car or in the truck.
Right.
We're talking already because we know what the truck pack is. We know what comes out, where it goes, so we can stay on top of labor. So I don't have guys just standing around with nothing to do. They're working for a solid
right.
5 hours to get it in.
Now, a lot of guys who are performing magic have their own one-man show, and they're not doing the big illusion shows and needing necessarily all the technical support that you would have. So for some of those smaller guys, they still would need some technical support as far as audio or lighting and whatever. What's the minimum you would recommend for people who are like a one-man show or doing just a banquet at a hotel? Or what do you think they should have as far as curtains, lights, audio, whatever?
Yeah, I would look at the overall, you know, there's two words, show and business, and we need to have them both.
Yeah.
I mean, to be successful, and I could list names right off the top of my head that people could look into and go, okay, these gentlemen and ladies like understand show and business. So you need to look at your business and look at where you're performing. Are you doing blue and gold banquets and birthday parties, or are you doing corporate events for 500 people, or are you doing stadium arena shows for 1,500 to 2,000 people?
Mm-hmm.
That makes a big difference in the type of gear you're going to handle. If you're doing a one-man stand-up show, my strong suggestion is the fact that, A, if you don't have a player, a show tech, a mini tech, a cue list, push the button and it plays by itself.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, you need to have your music on as an MP3, and then you also need to have it as a CD.
Mm-hmm.
Because although we're set up for everything for magic conventions, because we've been doing them so long, sure. We understand what's going to come at us, most houses don't have a computer tied into their sound system. They have an old CD player sitting there.
That's true.
So now it's more work on the tech staff if you just show up with an MP3.
So if you don't have your own stuff that you're bringing, as you say, your own audio player or amplifier or whatever, you should bring a flash drive as well as a CD.
I would strongly recommend a flash drive as well as a CD, and I would do a CD as an MP3, and I would do it also as a like a WAV file, because you never know the venue you're going into.
That's a good idea.
They probably bought that CD player in 1997. Might not play the music.
Right, but some of them, of course, with Apple, they have MP4s instead of
right.
MP3s, which is different.
It is different, but an MP4 could be, you know, that could be on the CD as well,
mm-hmm.
and then all three formats could be on the jump drive. So when they walk in and they say, hey, Steve, do you have music? I do. What do you got? I got a jump drive as an MP3. Perfect, I'll take that. Or
right.
I can't use a computer file. We have a CD player.
You know what I like to do whenever I'm coming into a perform at a country club or a hotel or something is, first of all, whenever I'm negotiating with my client, is to say that I can provide music, I can provide these additional services for additional money. However, it's one of those things that is add-on services. Whenever you quote a price, they're going to say, well, that sounds good. And then you can say, and also I can do this for an additional. Okay, we can do that. At some point, they're going to say no.
Right.
Or you can kind of scale back. The point being is that I would like to use as much of their stuff as they can afford. So, in other words, they're going to say, well, we can't add on the additional audio or whatever. Say, well, fine, I'll just use your microphone and plug into your system or you're arranging for the audio with the hotel. And so I would like to use theirs as much as I can, so that way I have less stuff to have to carry.
Yeah. I'm torn on that. I agree the pack small, play big, commando act, Jeff McBride's whole concept.
But if you're traveling out of town, I mean, if you're doing something locally, I can carry my stuff. It's not a big deal. But if I'm going to be going to Chicago and doing a show, I'm going to have... Yeah.
Yeah, and I get that. And my strong suggestion is if you don't have an MP3 tech or those right. self-contained systems, that you have your music on your CD, you have your music on your jump drive, and that you probably should also travel with your own microphone. The only reason
it's not that heavy.
Heavy. It could fit in your backpack. Everybody's carrying a backpack. Right. It could go in your carry-on. You could get it put in your case because then you know you're going to sound good and you're used to your own microphone. So many times, I know this is an audible thing, but so many times, you know, guys are reaching up and playing with the mic because they're not used to it. Watch here at the convention. When we put a earpiece on them, that's all they're going to be doing is playing with it because they're not comfortable with it.
That's right.
One of the acts we teched this morning, Trent James, said, "Can I use my own microphone?" Yeah, do you have it? Yep. He says, I'm just used to it. Well, that makes complete sense because it's a comfort level. Microphones range in price from $300 to $3,000. I mean, it depends on what you want to spend. That goes back to the show and business end of it. Look at what you're doing. If you're making $100 a show, don't spend $300 on a microphone because it'll take the three shows to pay yourself back for that.
Yeah.
But you also have to pay for fuel and insurance and rent and da-da-da-da-da. You'll never get, you know, stay within your means. If you were to travel with your own sound system, I strongly, strongly recommend that you have something that would pay to at least 500 people. No offense to the guys like at Happy Amp. It's a great little system.
That's not going to play to that side
it's
of the room.
It's not. It's a great little system for beginners, birthday parties and living room shows, but it's not. And they realize that. That's their focus.
Sure.
But don't try to bring that into a ballroom like we're here at the Jacksonville Hyatt Regency. Don't try to bring a Happy Amp in and expect your corporate client to... be able to be satisfied with what you're supplying.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. I strongly recommend if you're going to buy a system, you buy something that's self-powered. So much easier. You have a plug and you plug it into the wall, you're done. You don't have to carry amps. You don't have to carry a lot of cables. If you have two systems and they're self-powered, all you have to do is tie them together. Mm-hmm. One cable. Again, that fits in the back of your car and you can take it with you.
You've got a whole lecture, actually, as I recall. I think you gave this at the combined convention last year.
Yeah.
I heard nothing. I missed that, but I heard nothing but just rave reviews that this was like one of the top lectures of the convention.
The unfortunate thing for me is I would love to share because I'm totally self-taught. Yeah. I didn't go to a class and say, okay, what's the best way to produce a magic convention?
Yeah.
And no, I produced it, and my son's 6 years old, and I tell him, don't touch the pot. What's he going to do? He touches the pot.
Yeah.
He's going to burn himself, and that's how he's going to learn. Well, I do the same thing with my guys and my crew. Touch the pot. I don't want it to be detrimental to the show, but I want you to learn. And you say, okay, it didn't work. Let's do it some way different.
Right.
And, I mean, I know my guys can attest to that they've learned so much by doing so many different types of acts.
Mm-hmm.
The lights work the same way every time we hang them up. It's how we hang them, where we hang them, and the process of getting them hung that is the variable for us.
Mm-hmm.
We can plan all we want, and then we get in a room and go, oh, somebody didn't tell us about the chandelier.
Yeah. Well, what is one of your biggest tips that you would give to someone who is going to be going out or for their first show or, you know, maybe not their first show, but something they need to have?
I think the biggest thing is being organized. I think that is the biggest... When I entertained, when I was opening for, you know, Weird Al Yankovic, they don't want to deal with a guy that walks in with five cases and has 25 minutes of tech and no move this here. They don't want that. They want a guy that walks in,
easy,
plugs in, and does it because you're just a support act. You're not the act. So... I organization to me is everything. The guys are organized inside their case when they're performing, so they don't have to shuffle through and find the marker. They know where the marker always is. They know where the brick is, the shoe is, the deck of cards, whatever it is they're doing. So I strongly recommend organization, but the organization from a technical end as well. Be set, ready to rock and roll. If you have your own system that you're coming in, your own, again, going back to the MP3 text and things, have the different adapters.
Mm-hmm.
Because the house might not be able to take quarter.
I've learned that from experience.
The hard way, right? That's touching the pot.
I got a whole case of adapters.
You know, unfortunately, Radio Shack is no longer around, or should I say fortunately, Radio Shack.
I have run down to Radio Shack once or twice.
That was probably the only thing that Radio Shack was good for. No endorsement there. But, you know, stay organized and have those things, because when you come into a house and they say, you know, hey, I got this, got to tie it in, and I got quarter inch. They go, yeah, we can't take quarter inch. Oh, what can you take? You're ready for it. You unzip your little microphone bag, your little toiletry kit that has everything you need in it.
Right.
Staying organized. think of these things. What if you cut your finger when you're loading in? What if you smash your finger in a door? What if you get a splinter? What if something breaks? Do you have any tape with you? Do you have a light to look backstage, because they're going to put you in a broom closet because that's the only thing they have? Are you able to see?
I carry a flashlight in my pocket all the time.
Do you have something, a little pair of scissors, a little knife or something to cut tape or whatever with?
Right.
Do you have a Band-Aid? Do you have some tape to put a, keep your microphone
on?
All those things, you make yourself what I call a possible bag. Anything you could possibly need if something goes wrong is in that bag. Zip ties, I mean, you've come over and look at our workbox. I mean, you open it up, you wouldn't believe what's in there.
I might take a picture of that, post it on the blog, too.
That'd be great.
Okay, well, our lunch has come, then, and so let me just wrap this up real quickly so this doesn't get cooled off. What would be your magic word? In other words, what's important to you? What would be your philosophy of life? Ryan, what is important to you?
Well, it's just...
It could be a phrase, not necessarily a word.
Well, it's just all about just keeping the focus.
Focus. Okay.
Keeping focus and, you know, just knowing what you're doing and getting it done.
That's important, what you're doing on your job well, and working over here. Steven, sure.
All right, so word would be respect.
Okay.
Coming from the technical side, respect your tech crew.
Yeah.
Coming from the professional side, respect your peers. We're all in this for the same reason. And then most important is respect your client. Have respect for your client. Don't don't come in as a type A personality and pompous and blah, blah, blah. We've all seen it happen.
Yeah, that's the last
and unfortunately, we've all done it.
Yeah.
But we've learned from touching that pot as well.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, I got to go along with my tagline that I see for my company is quality is not expensive, it's priceless.
I love it.
That's it.
That sounds great. That was Ryan and Stephen Klein for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I've been walking around the dealer's room, and I'm going to talk with one of the dealers, but more than that, I've got Garrett Thomas with me, and you're more than a dealer. I wouldn't really consider you necessarily a dealer. You're really, I consider you a magician's magician.
Thank you.
And you've been working with Cosmo for a long time, and you've had a lot of good stuff on Real Magic, plus developing some of your own things. I just want to talk to you about creativity, not necessarily about being a dealer or anything, because this isn't going to be like promoting that necessarily so much as it is just how do you get into your creative mojo? I mean, what do you do?
Well, I play games. I mean, everything.
I know you love Rubik's Cubes and all kinds of games like that.
You know, there's those type of games, but you also want to create a very youthful environment.
Mm-hmm.
I have always these lots of projects going on, or lots of puzzles, and I experiment with everything. Drawing, painting, you know, not just inside the magic world, outside of it.
Which is important. A lot of people, I think, is kind of, I guess it would be just masturbation. It's just something, you know, it's just for yourself. It's not looking outside.
But it's what they would call a closed system.
Okay.
If you have nothing feeding from the outside and nothing leaving...
Yeah.
It can't grow.
Exactly.
It's a closed system.
Yeah.
So if you're not finding the magic trick in a song that you're listening to, mm-hmm. or finding the magic trick in a painting that you love, you're missing a wonderful way of putting yourself into the magic.
Right.
If you just do what the magicians tell you, if you just buy my trick and do it the way I do it,
right.
Well, you're giving your audience a better chance to meet me. And the creative environment, you know, what is a blessing about the art of magic is that I can teach you the juggling, but I can't teach you the mind. The part of the magic that is you.
Your personality.
Your personality. Luckily, it never can be something I just give you.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you all the moves, but you still are going to have to put yourself into it. And creating an environment where you can experiment, fail, succeed, finding shows that you can do and be bad, you know, and just try out ideas. Working in restaurant magic, which is what I focus on, 7 days a week, I'm testing out something new every night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll even have other friends of mine that do the same type of environments, restaurant magic. Reed McClintock. We'll call each other and we would say, okay, this week do something with a rubber band and a safety pin and try to make a whole act around that.
Wow, that's
challenging. And he would always have these crazy great ideas, and I would work on my own stuff, and we always came up with different answers, but it was just like these weird challenges. If you don't do that, then you're not going to grow. You know, if you just do what's being done, then it's not, you know, you're not going to discover something new.
Right.
You know, if you do what you did, you're only going to get what you got.
Yeah, you're chasing something that's already been created as opposed to chasing a star that's further out of your reach.
And a lot of times it turns out and it's something that's silly and you don't like it. But every once in a while, something just, like, clicks and it just
fits. Well, it's the same thing, I think, with comedians. When they're working on material, that they're working in comedy clubs and they see what falls flat and what really, you know, resonates.
And they have rules, like, if they're hanging out with their friends, if it makes you laugh once, you have to try it on stage. Right?
Okay,
and it could be something like there's a lot of things you would say with your friends that you would never want to say publicly.
Yeah.
But they have this like rule where it's like if it works, it works with your friends.
With our group here.
You got to at least try it once on stage.
Wasn't it the same thing then with magicians, you're saying?
Kind of,
so whenever you're working
with magicians, you discover something and it works, go into it. You know, dive into it and try it, you know. There are things that in the real world, things that I think would have to work, you know, so well. I'm a huge fan of Jerry Andrews' Linking Pins. And it's always, you know, I don't know if I'm presenting it wrong or if something's going on, but it's I'm always getting this, huh, that's really interesting reaction. And it's not getting the screams that I think it deserves.
Yeah.
And then there's other tricks that I think, oh, this is horrible.
Yeah.
And you do it, and people go nuts. You know, and it's hard to predict if you don't go out there and test it. It's hard to predict from your lounge chair, from your computer desk, that, oh, this will work and this won't.
Right, you have to have some
get
time
out
to
there,
go out
get
and
out
it.
There and play.
There was something, one of those example. I had purchased the phone levitation that Paul Richards was selling. One of those things that has a great video, and I bought it. I've done it a bunch of times, and I have never had the kind of reaction I think it deserves. It's exactly what you're saying. They go, huh.
It's not a negative reaction.
No.
They love it, but it's like it doesn't get the scream.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, wow, that's really good. You know, and maybe it's you know, it could possibly be that it's too good, that they're so internalizing in that moment that the astonishment has gotten to be where they are so thinking, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
What did I just experience?
Yeah.
That they're no longer even emoting anything. You know, often astonishment can look like boredom on someone's face. You know, their jaws drop and their eyes glaze over because they're internalizing everything they just experienced.
Right.
And in boredom, what they're really doing is they're so bored with what's happening that they're daydreaming and they're internalizing to get away.
Right.
But an astonishing moment, sometimes they can dive inside themselves for a moment and just analyze, what was that? So
that's why sometimes after a show, the people will come up to you and say, that was a fantastic show, but you didn't know that during the show because they weren't reacting.
Yeah, pushing through that those moments where you're not getting applause and the audience is just taking it all in.
Yeah.
It's so easy to cop out and add comedy and cop out and add something that gets a reaction for your own good.
Yeah.
So it makes you feel good. You know, if you know the trick is good and you know it works and it gets a reaction, even if that reaction is silent, it still is an emotional reaction. Astonishment, you know, is, even if they internalize, you have to push through that. And really be honest with yourself and judge, okay, are they interested? Are they shutting down? Are they, you know, because often, you're right, after the show, they'll come up to you, that was like, when you did that thing, you're like, you know, I had no idea. I have no idea that you loved it. So it's really, you know, being honest with yourself and judging what to keep and what to throw away.
Well, and that's a difficult thing, I think, also then too, Garrett, because that you may think, I need to throw that away because I'm not getting the reaction. And then afterwards, again, when they come to you and say, I really enjoyed it, then they may say, well, I like the whole thing, but they're not specific about a particular thing that really astonished them. And so then you think, I'm going to throw that away because no one gave me the response I think it deserves. Because we're looking and expecting a certain response, but not getting that. And when we don't, we think, okay, we've got to move on.
Yeah, it depends on your goals. I mean, if your goal is because magic makes you feel good when you're performing it, then throw it away. Because if you're not feeling good, if you're not comfortable up there, but to me, that's not my goal. My goal is their experience. And I would much rather have them freaked out and just thinking about what they just went through.
They just experienced.
Then them laughing and rolling on the floor. For me, the end goal is magic, astonishment. When Tom Rez blew my mind, you know, years ago, I finally understood what this was all about. You know, because I was, you know, we in America, we are born and somebody hands you a magic kit.
Yeah.
You know, and daddy, I like magic. Oh, here's a magic kit. That's the horrible, that's the worst thing to do. Imagine the same kid going up to dad and going, Dad, I really like Eric Clapton. Oh, that's great. Here's a guitar.
Yeah.
Right?
Good luck.
Right? You know, that it's not the right process. The right process is, oh, you like Eric Clapton? Let me take you to a show. Let me get you a t-shirt. Let me buy you an album. And then, oh, you really like guitar? Now let's educate you about it once he shows interest. But we inundate American kids and probably other cultures as well with method right away. Anybody that we don't allow people to be fans of magic. Anyone that shows interest in magic at all, instantly we throw a magic kit at them. And that's not the best thing. Maybe, you know, it's okay for me to love musicals and not sing and dance. It is totally okay for me to love painting and never pick up a paintbrush. Why do we not allow people to love magic and not learn a trick?
It could be the same way like a sports, in which that there's someone says, well, I like baseball, and it could be just like the team where they play, but as opposed to taking your child then to sign up for a baseball in Little League or something, you know.
Yeah, but at least then you probably would have taken them to a game first before you threw a baseball bat in their hand.
Yeah.
So it's allowing your audience to enjoy magic.
Mm-hmm. The experience of it. Yeah.
And true astonishment, I never experienced it. I mean, I was already performing as a professional magician. It wasn't great, but I was 16, 17, 18. And then I met Tom Rez, and he blew my mind with a couple of tricks that sunk in. And I finally got to feel what astonishment was about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, what is this is what I want to give people. I want to give people this moment. It's an abstract moment. It cannot happen. You know, it's not something that fools you. It's something that you know cannot happen, and it just happened in front of you.
Physics.
You know, I perform at the Skeptics Conference, and I always think it's funny that people say to magicians, go get Amy, she's the skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a bad thing. And I realized, wait a minute, I went on stage at the Skeptics Conference, and I said, you know, the one thing about magic is you can't enjoy it unless you're skeptical. If you just believe and you accept everything as real, there's no astonishment. The moment you say, I know this can't happen, and it just happened, that's where this conundrum of this thought, this experience that just happened, and that moment floats in your mind. Wait, it can't happen because I know these things. I know how reality works, and this is not real. And that's the gift of a magician. Because we're not selling you anything. We're not starting churches. We don't want you to believe.
Right.
You know, we're the first to go out of our way. No, I'm not psychic.
Right.
You know, this is a trick. But we want you to experience it. And what I have over here is Salvador Dali's Persistence of Time.
Okay.
He never wanted anyone to believe that there was a melting clock in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
But he wanted everyone to experience it.
Okay.
And that's the gift of a magician, is we want to give you a moment that you can't get anywhere else. How blessed are we that we can forget about survival and enjoy any type of art form? Mm-hmm. And magic is abstract performance art. I can create a moment in time and space, in this moment now, that you could never get, even if you lived to be 8,000 years old, these things will never naturally occur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes an artist. It takes a magician. You know, I started thinking of myself as an artist, that I am an artist, and magic is my medium. If I could blow someone's mind with a painting, I would do it.
Yeah.
You know, but because I love the gift of astonishment. And if I could do it with any other art form, I would do it. But magic seems to be the best way to give that type of moment of pure astonishment.
I understand. Along that line, I've told this story on the podcast in the past, but I was with Don Weiberg one time, and we were at a flea market, and there was this person who was selling crystals and stones and these kinds of things, and she was talking about the importance of, you know, the stone helps cure this or whatever kind of a thing. And so he was set up to do this skeleton key, rotating key, basically. It was
the haunted key.
Basically. Yeah. And so he had it in his hand, and he said, so he held it over one of these stones, and as he did, then the key would rotate in his hand, and the lady just goes, yeah, that's what it does. And I mean, there was no astonishment. It's because she believed that she had those kinds of powers.
Yeah,
she was all invested in that. So
And it's sad because we have this wonderful moment to really share with people, and sometimes they can't enjoy it. And like I said, at the conference, you know, you have to be skeptical to enjoy magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not meant to be a puzzle, but you have to have that little moment where you're like, I know this is not real.
Yeah.
And that's why you can enjoy it. People that have already, you know, it's another thought is suspension of disbelief is horrible for magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's great in theater because you play along, this guy on stage is Napoleon for the next hour. But in magic, if they don't trust that what they're experiencing is a real thing, it loses its astonishment as well. You know, so if they just buy into it, they're playing along.
Yeah.
You know, then after they leave your show, they're not going, oh, he was a great magician. They're like, oh, that was a nice show, or it was theater.
Right.
They don't walk away astonished. But if they go, wait a minute, you know, I was on stage with him, and there was no trapdoors, and this is the theater in my town, and I work for the theater, and I know there's no wing space for a jet,
right.
You know, or whatever, and that's when it really blows people's minds, is because they trust the environment, and they don't have to. Any suspension of disbelief is the willing suspension of disbelief is horrible for magic, because it then just people are playing along. And if you're playing along, you might as well use CGI and laser lights and smoke.
But at some point, after they have had their mind blown for so many times, it's kind of like, okay, well, the next thing I'm going to expect to happen.
And that's about construction of a show.
Yes.
You know, I talk about weaving between the magical and the magic. You don't want to beat someone up with magic. I mean, if you have 47 tricks in your show, you're being abusive. The magic cup is full.
Yeah.
It might be full after the first three tricks.
Right.
So you need to create texture. And the texture isn't, you know, just adding more jokes and stuff like that. You want, you know, you remember my signature where you can read it upside down.
Right.
There's no magic there. But it's
That's
interesting.
Cool.
It's magical.
Yeah.
And so I talk about interlacing the magical with the magic. So if you do magic, they're still processing the first trick.
Yeah.
And we also often work way too fast. I think the best magic show would be, you know, an honest magic show, if you were really presenting it as magic, it would be more like what Uri Geller does, where he talks for a while, talks about life, sells a couple books, and then bends one spoon. And everyone goes away happy.
Right. Bob Reed used to talk for 45 minutes and produce a bottle.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we just, working with Blaine, we just do the Distinguished Speaker Series. Went to different schools talking to the students, 6,100 people. And David talks and does a couple of tricks, and they leave satisfied and happy. You know, we believe, because we compare magic to comedy often, we believe that laughs per minute is how you judge comedy, and that we almost want to astonish people. But you can laugh every second in a show, and it's a wonderful show. But if you're astonished every second, it's torture. You know, it'd be way too much.
It goes back to something that Steven Spielberg had said when he had made Jaws, that there was this moment in which the shark actually appears, and the guy turns around and says, we're going to need a bigger boat. There's a moment in there in which everybody jumps in their seat. He only uses that surprise once in his movies, because let's say, like with the movie Halloween or some other horror movies, you got boom, 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 boom. After a while, something's going to be behind that corner.
They learn to expect it, and then it loses its impact.
And so you can lose that with a magic show easily if you don't construct it properly.
You have to construct the show so that there is a cadence, a proper rhythm that allows people to take in the magic fully. Because what you end up doing, if you don't create that nice cadence and framing of each moment properly, then you end up just doing more and more and more to try to get the reaction, and it's like you're chasing that high. You're just like trying to make it happen again and you're throwing more at them faster.
Right.
And it's not going to work that way. You need to pause, frame things, and set it up properly. Let them fully understand what's going to happen, and then give it to them, and then.
Right.
Do other things, you know, things that are interesting. Talk about, you know, more longer intros that are more texture. can, you know, you can actually take away half your tricks from a show. If you have a trick, if you have a show, an hour show, and you got like 10 tricks in it, it's probably way too much.
Right.
You know, because you're, that means you're doing a trick, you know, every
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like how much astonishment, you know, at these conventions, the first day, our Astonishment Cup gets filled.
Yeah.
And now we are connoisseurs, so we can put it somewhere. But there's no more room. And we could see the next day, or the third day, or the fourth day, we could see some of the best magic in the world, and our reaction is going to be, that's really good. Now, we know it's good, because we're connoisseurs, and we know what's good and what's bad, but we don't react, mm-hmm. because our Astonishment Cup is full.
I just came from FISM, and I saw the contest, stage contest, and they were fantastic. And any one of those shows would have been a highlight at any convention. As I'm looking at, let's say, Koreans, many of the Asians who are doing the manipulation mm-hmm. acts, they started becoming, after the first few, which were fantastic and got standing ovations, in which they are pausing and posing, and they're very slow and methodical in their productions and manipulation of this, that after a while it's like, okay, I think I've seen it. And then whenever that Hector Mancha came, and he was producing dollar bills from nowhere, basically, still manipulation, but completely different in his style and his character. He changed it, and he won a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And I think it perhaps may have been then, Garrett, what you're talking about, that we were inundated so much that we were no longer astonished with the beauty of these other acts.
It's the hard part about judging
yeah.
a competition like that, because you need, you know, we only have so much time to judge these things, and you need moments of pauses after mm-hmm. to take it all in.
Right.
To really go, and the magic experience does not end at the moment the show ends.
Right.
You know, the people talk about, I was 7 years old when I saw this magician at the Forks Hotel, and
yeah.
and I'm like, you don't even remember your wife's name, and this you're in, you know, and you remember what you did when you were seven, and you're
yeah.
talking about, you know, because that, the true astonishment is something people carry with them,
mm-hmm.
and it deserves a spotlight. It deserves the right framing, and if you don't, it's not going to be astonishing. It's
right.
going to be a trick. It's
right.
going to be a gag. It's going to be a game, and but framed right, and if you give it enough time, then the magic settles in. And you're like, man, really? Where were those dollar bills? Like,
right.
like he, his sleeves were up, and he was like, it was like, bang,
yeah.
bang, 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 bang. What's going on here?
Right.
You need that. Those moments after,
right.
but the judges don't get that. They're
right.
abused. These judges are. There's here. Watch this guy. And watch this guy. And watch this guy. And watch this guy. And your magic cup is full.
Mm-hmm.
And you really now you have to judge it intellectually only, and you can't let your emotions
correct
sway you
right.
because you're no longer going to get that. You know, that gasp of, mm-hmm. you know, surprise, because your magic cup is full.
Right.
So you have to be smarter. If you're going to be a judge and you're going to critique magic, you have to, you know, push all the emotions away, because it's going to be overwhelming.
And see, each show fresh. As,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we could spend an hour talking over here, and perhaps next year when you're on tour to come by the house, we'll
yeah.
Sit and chat for a much longer time. But just to wrap up, we'll hear the name of my podcast. It's called The Magic Words. My question then, Garrett, what would be your phrase, your philosophy? I think you've said it a million times already, but what is your word?
My word for magic is a new and impossible moment.
Okay.
And as we are magicians, we're not actors, mm-hmm. we're not portraying the roles of magicians, we are giving these moments. These magic moments are not supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving the gift of the experience of a new and impossible moment, of a magical moment.
Right.
And we as artists are constructing this moment through what we say and do to create an experience that is abstract.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Garrett Thomas. This is Scotty out. You know, I think that was some nice variety we had here today, a little bit from some of the performers and the dealers, and some bits of philosophy and some good advice all the way around. I hope you guys learned something from this podcast, as I did as well. Stay tuned tomorrow. We'll be providing you with another update. This has been Day One from Jacksonville, Florida, and the International Brotherhood of Magicians. For the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.